Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with a very special guest, Bill Sweet. Bill Sweet, and I'm going to let him introduce this in a little bit more detail, worked with Spirit Drift, and they actually worked on a consciousness and research project combining religion and science with some very unique results revolving around prayer, amongst many other things. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Well, thank you. And it's easy to remember the term spindrift. It rhymes with spendthrift. So that usually works for people. And a lot of people never heard the word spindrift before. It's in some dictionaries, and it refers to the spray at the edge of a wave out at sea during a hurricane. It's a special spray blowing at a certain speed. And if a spindrift hits you in the face, the spray, it actually cuts into your face like nails. It's a very fast-moving spray that takes on physical form because of how fast it's moving.
What made you start your journey a little bit on a unique thing such as combining religion and science and kind of study and prayer?
Well, I'm in the Chicago area, and I've always been interested, always, as a kid, in paranormal phenomena and religious phenomena. And I was in contact with people all over the country, and there are a lot of interesting groups in Chicago that are interested in these things. But serendipitously, I got to meet Bruce and John Klingbeil, who live three towns over from mine. And Bruce and John Klingbeil worked as Christian Science practitioners for the church. If you're not familiar with that, they were people who were praying for people and counseling people. And they also had a scientific bent to them. Besides the Christian science, they were amateur scientists. And they were doing experiments with prayer. They were bringing people in to their homemade laboratory and testing their prayers on plants and some parapsychology experiments. And they've been doing this for years. And I got to meet them. And then I got involved with them. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, they weren't across the country in California. They're right here in the Chicago area. So it was really tremendous. And then really got involved and became president of the group for 4 years. And from that, it led to a lot of interesting scientific conferences and consciousness conferences. And it's been a blast.
Yeah, no, it's actually fascinating. I was reading a little bit on it earlier today, and I remember reading the original studies where you tested prayer and the effects on plant life, basically soybeans, things along those lines, and tried to see how it would affect the growth levels. That's an amazing way of looking at it, because I know that being from a marketing background, we learned something very, very quickly, which I spoke motivationally on for many, many years, and that's the power of positive thinking. You know, the more positive you are in a situation, the more positive things happen around you. And it's a very tested theory that works out really well. But I wouldn't have thought about applying that to prayer, even though prayer is a positive thing.
Well, spindrift, interestingly enough, and this because it could be bifurcated into many directions here, so I try to keep it on track. Spindrift, to be fair to all the different religions that we tested both positive prayer and negative prayer. You'd be surprised, some elements of some religions pray negative prayers. So we did both types of testing, otherwise our research wouldn't be complete. But a positive and happy and cheerful attitude certainly is helpful. But sometimes people have agendas in their subconscious mind that are kind of dark that actually surface in their prayers, and we're able to track that in our prayers. And what we found, and the way we track things was, is that some people pray with this directed thought where they're pushing a result with their psychic thought and their prayer thought, and they are directing the end of the action through their positive thinking or whatever. And we call this type of action in prayer goal-directed prayer, where you have a goal in mind. Now, it's very tricky because some goals are spiritually motivated, but a lot of goals are not. There's a lot of selfish goals. A lot of people use prayer to get things. They petition, petitionary. Jesus talks about it's right to petition and ask, and you should receive. The trouble is a lot of people ask and receive for the wrong things or selfish things. And we can find this in our research, because the way it happens is that when somebody prays that way, and the plants that they're praying for, whatever plant they're praying for is a different kind of soybean or mung bean or yeast or flowers or whatever it is, that seeds that are being the subject of prayer, the computer is showing that there is this 45-degree angle that's pushing the plant up and up, and you can see the effect that people are having on the plants. But that is not what is good for the plant, yet it is an effect on the plant. And they think that that's what the plant needs, but actually they're not giving the plant what it needs. They're interfering with what's normal for the plant. In contrast to that, we found people that were more spiritually minded in their attitude toward prayer, and they pray for what is best, not what they necessarily want, but what is best in a situation. And we found this to be a much more holy and quality prayer. The scientists at Spindrift, Bruce and John Kleinbaum, designated this type of prayer non-goal-directed prayer, where there was not a goal in mind, but what was best in the situation. This is a much more desirable prayer, a harder prayer to produce, because people always have an agenda in their mind. It's hard to get rid of that. But that type of prayer forms a completely different pattern than this 45-degree pattern that comes from goal-directed prayer. With non-goal-directed prayer, there's a broken pattern of the plant getting what it needs at any moment in time. And you see the shifting parts on the lines on the chart, up and down and sideways as this happens. And there's an understood pattern of what is normal for a plant to match it against. So you know that this is what is the healing element that the plant is getting that it needs, versus being pushed around by psychic thought or goal-directed thought. So we have two different patterns of thought produced by two different types of prayer that we have been able to isolate in the laboratory. And then there are many other types of prayer too, but basically Spindrift has concentrated on this goal-directed prayer and non-goal-directed prayer. And then some people pray and they don't get any result at all. There's always that too, for some reason. Some people don't convey their thoughts through prayer. At least in our experiments, they don't. And what we found too is that in the goal-directed prayer, you also have people that pray negatively, and they actually do more damage than good with what they're doing. And that's trackable too. And you wonder what's in them that they do that.
Yeah, no, that actually makes sense. Psychologically speaking, from the human mind, a lot of times we apply our wants and needs to our thoughts, and that would go into our prayers. And sometimes they're not exactly the most positive things. Even though it may be what we want, we also reflect the negativity involved, whether it be the disgust, the hatred, the whatever it might be. It gets reflected in that image when we're thinking about it, when we're praying about it, when we're searching sometimes, and so forth. And it's hard to create that happy medium. And sometimes
that's right.
Sometimes I think it's
now you can see examples of this on our website, spindriftresearch.org, under experiments. And also in my book, A Journey into Prayer by Bill Sweet, the entire appendix of my book is full of experiments that show these things in scientific detail.
You know, and it's amazing that you do that, because a lot of people throughout the paranormal society, I think the science, it's went to the wayside a lot of times with the common public. This is why it's very interesting to read your book. It's very interesting to read into your research. And listeners, I encourage you to do this, because the paranormal is a fascinating place. And there's a lot of research, a lot of science from a lot of different avenues and a lot of different people that have nothing to do with what you're seeing on media and television a lot of times. It's not all about ghosts and UFOs and cryptids and so forth. The paranormal, when you start digging into it, you do parapsychology, and you spend time thinking about things, touches many, many aspects of the world and many, many different things. It's really fascinating that prayer is one of those things. So I'm very excited that I have you on, Bill. I'm sure you've got a lot of things that you want to talk about. So I'm going to.
Oh yeah, but I've got to tell you before we go on, a Chicago prayer joke. It only relates to Chicago now, but it relates to what's going on right now. A Chicago prayer joke for you. A 100-year-old man prayed, "God, let me live until the elections, so I vote once." Chicago is known for people getting votes from the graveyard. That's well known. Yeah. That's well known.
That's actually, I caught the joke. I don't know how many listeners will catch it and how many won't, but that's a cute little thing there. So
yeah, it's only relevant now. So yeah, well, it's very interesting what you're perceiving there about it all. And if people would like to read a press release about my book on the Spindrift website, spindriftresearch.org, just press book, and you'll see the press release there. And there's links there to Amazon.com and my publisher for the book too. And the book is hardcover, softcover, and then Kindle.
It's actually, I mean, I'm only a quarter of the way through some of it. I've read a lot of the research attached to it on and off throughout the week. But
did you find it easy to follow?
I did.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Some people have a tough time with it. I tried in the book, I stayed away from mathematics. If people are interested in the mathematics, we have that too, but it's not in the book. The real math, I mean, the heavy math.
Yeah, well, I'm a very scientific person in the way I go about most of my research and study. Being in a, I'm a paranormal historian now. It's taken a long time to say that, but.
Well, what are you doing with that? How far back do you go?
I've started at about 1793 and then ran all the way up to present. And I'm digging a little bit deeper than that now to get into early theologies and early religion and early practice.
Is that about the time when they started the Parapsychological Society and they started keeping records of things? Is that about the time they come a little later, or was that?
Right around the 1700s is when you start finding most of the records.
Okay. Great.
1753, you start seeing some brief records. By 1797, you're starting to get a little bit more solid records in prayer, paranormal research, certain applications. By the early 1800s, you start to see a lot of societies and different theories start to develop and so forth. I'm actually doing a book myself here that's coming out next year that talks a little bit about it, and then I'm going to break that down into a couple other sub books as we go, because it's fascinating. I don't know if it'll probably bore the crap out of a lot of people, but I've spent many years.
We all have our niche. I think the important point to point out to people, and I get this, I just got an email from somebody today that said, well, I don't care about proving anything. I don't care about it. I believe it myself. That's all that's needed. Well, that's true, but what we're heading into, unfortunately, in the future, is more of a skeptical society, and we need evidence of the paranormal, evidence of prayer, and evidence of spirituality and the benefit of it, because the way things are going, technology is going to answer everything for everybody. It's going to replace everything in society, religion, spirituality, prayer, paranormal. Everything is going to have a technological aspect to it. We have to have something that parallels that, or really society will just become a machine, and it's a precarious situation we're in. And I think some people are starting to recognize this.
Oh, it's a scary situation. Technology, even though it's helpful, it's also a crutch if you don't realize the basics start to go away, if that makes any sense. I mean,
it makes a lot of sense. In fact, this is an interesting thing. When they go to the website, spindriftresearch.org, I am the current blog writer for Spindrift. And my very first blog you'll go to is on this subject, how technology is interfering with our paranormal and spiritual sensitivities.
I could really see that, because people are relying more on technology than common instinct
lot of times. Oh, it's really getting frightening. And I have to say that I'm a little guilty of it myself. I'm falling into it. I have to be careful.
Yeah, you do. It's in every form of society. I remove the technology as much as possible from my child growing up right now. And a lot of families look at me and go, well, why do you do that? My kid doesn't have a cell phone. When she's on a computer or a game machine, I'm monitoring it on a regular basis. I limit the time on there. And I do that for a reason. She's got to learn the basics in life and how to react with that before technology enters, or she's never going to be able to take care of herself if it disappears.
Right. And we have to be able to teach ourselves to read more than five paragraphs and stop. This is another thing. People aren't reading deeply as a rule, too. And that can be a real problem.
It's a massive problem in the paranormal, especially these days, because people don't take the time to realize the history of what has been done in order to educate themselves on what can be done now. And that's a battle I fight every single day.
Right. And along those lines, a lot of skeptics don't know that there is a lot of literature out there that have shown experiments. You talk to a lot of skeptics and mainline scientists, they said, you guys don't have anything. There's actually quite a body of literature out there of successful experiments, but they have this belief that there isn't. So if you can't get over that belief and actually investigate, you'll never see it. I mean, it's hard to talk to a closed mind or somebody who's already made up their mind, you know. It's a very strange thing. How do you convince a closed mind? I'm working on that one. Would that be the greatest thing if we could solve that?
Solve that? I think most of our problems in society would go away.
Yes. That would be the ultimate experiment. I hope somebody comes up with a way to do that. There is a very interesting video, and I'm sure you're aware of it, of Rupert Sheldrake on YouTube talking on this topic of consciousness and the paranormal. Have you heard about it?
I have, yes.
And it got banned. They took it off. It was a TED Talk. They took it off because they thought he was talking anti-science and criticizing everybody. And that wasn't at all. He was trying to extend the closed-mindedness of science to these things, to these subjects. That's all he was doing. He wasn't knocking it.
To a lot of that, though, I've met some very outstanding scientific minds that work in quantum physics, they work in neurology, that have came up with some very unique proven things that apply, and then they just kind of get pushed to the back burner. Either you have the dedicated scientists that are all old school and they push them to the back burner, or you have the other side of the mix that is so far off key right now that they push it to the back burner and say, no, that can't be either. When if you read it, it's very intellectually put together where you can say, you know, that does make sense. That could be an applicable theory.
Yeah. Tell me about the neuroscience one. I'm really interested. I'm real familiar with quantum physics, but have you talked to a neuroscientist about it?
Well, there's a gentleman, and I'll send you over the links. His name is John, that created a theory that the brain works differently in the consciousness than the way we perceive it now. And as a part of that, it's very plausible that that consciousness not only lives on, but can live and create a new form around us based off of the energies that we do. And it's fascinating because the way he explains it, he puts together neuroscience. He did EEGs on multiple people in rooms by playing positive music and found out that positive healing factors were a result from this. And he also put EEGs in rooms after playing negative things like, you know, war and bad news reports and things along those lines, and found out that those people actually physically had negative responses in the neural systems in the brain when you monitored the EEGs later.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he's a fascinating man. And then he applied this to a book, several books actually, and several theories on how, you know, positive thinking when you're ill, when you have neurological conditions and so forth, can actually help you heal. The problem with that was the medical industry thought, well, you know, sounds good, but where's your proof? Okay, I've got the proof right here. And then you have a lot of other skeptics involved in it that says, well, that doesn't go with what we're believing right now, so we're just going to ignore it.
Everything you say rings true. What we're trying to do at Spindrift is add a wrinkle to what you just said. Yes, there's positive thinking, but we think there's an outside spiritual force that we call quality with a capital Q. I think in religion you'd call it the Christ power, the power of truth. That is an outside power that enhances and rides the wave of positive thinking and makes the situation improve. Because positive thinking alone doesn't know what the need is. It has its own ideas of what the need is. It might know a little bit, but it doesn't know the picture. It's actually the unknown power of God that knows what is needed in a situation. And that's the thing we were saying, that if we have to, we have to learn how to open up to that, where we don't know the answer, but we're open to it, to flow in us through non-goal-directed thought. That's hard to achieve because we have to get our egos and agendas out of the way, and that's just impossible to do, it seems, with the human mind, because we're always thinking, oh, this is what I want, this is what I'm thinking, I shouldn't think about that. And the minute you say you shouldn't think about something, you're thinking about it. You know how that is. You don't think of pink elephants. Try that out. You know. And
consciousness has a tendency of, you know, you go through your everyday things, and when something happens, you really have to grasp that, and it's hard to find the positive in the negative that's going on a lot of times. Now, I've learned a lot of times you can train yourself how to do that, but even then, you still fall into the normal habit sometimes, if that makes sense. So it's,
right.
I think
you'll find that what is unique about the Spindrift prayer research compared to other paranormal research is that there's these two bifurcated inputs to thought. The goal-directed thought that it's much easier to do for the human mind to do than even a non-religious or even an atheist can produce sometimes. And then there's this holy thought that we call qualitative thought that operates in the consciousness of the person praying, that produces a non-goal-directed effect where you are praying for what is best, and you're just surrounding the situation with divine love. And this is something that people desire to do, but the problem began is that how we do this consistently is a problem, because we are so trained in our Western culture to be goal-oriented, and it's counterintuitive to that. And there are times to be goal-directed, but the real effects of prayer that really benefit a situation are non-goal-directed effects. And I think the people, as they read the research, they will see that. That is what we hope the world will find. Through testing, at some point where we can test more and more people in the population, we'll find enough people in the population who can produce this non-goal-directed effect. And it might surprise them. There's some gifted people walking around the earth that don't even know they have this ability or gift. And the more people we have that, the more change towards good and spirituality we'll have. People have other ways of producing this non-goal-directed thought, too. I think some people in the arts, the entertainment, architecture, and inventors, people like this, are producing this goal-directed thought that is, they're producing these structures and senses of order and new things. It surprises them where they come from, but this creative flow goes through them, and something new comes that has never appeared the way it's appeared before. That's qualitative thought too. That's non-goal-directed thought too, where you're open for change, but you don't know what it is, but you keep on working on it, keep on experimenting, keep on trying this and keep on trying that. And then all of a sudden, something works. A lot of things in inventions work that way, surprisingly enough. Everybody thinks everything is linear in inventions. It isn't. It isn't. A lot of people are working on one thing and they discover something else, or they find out that this over here complements that, and they had no idea it did that. So they start pursuing that, and then that leads to something else. This is all working for what is best in a situation, but you actually don't know what it is, but you're working toward it. And that's how you pray too. You don't know what is best in a situation, but you're praying for what is best and you're seeking what is best. That's kind of hard to do. We don't think that way as a rule.
It definitely takes a little bit of balance. Listeners, you're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations here in the United States of America. I do encourage you, if you're looking to be on digital radio or if you're looking to do a podcast, go with the best. Go with BBS. Donald and his brother will take very good care of you. It's almost Halloween, and as such, there are many, many of you going on thousands of events across the United States of America. The first thing I want to tell you is be very, very safe and very, very careful out on the roads this Halloween. Obviously, some of the winter is coming in, and we've got some traffic that's going to be running around, especially here in Ohio. A few key notes to know. Austin Maynard, actually, in his, you can look him up a little bit. He's got a town here in Ohio that he's doing a haunted investigation on. This weekend, actually, I do believe, and next weekend, there's going to be some very good paranormal stars up there. I do encourage you, if there are still seats available, make sure you look it up. You can find Austin Maynard on Facebook, and it is Bryan, Ohio. We're actually speaking to Bill Sweet. Bill Sweet is with Spendrift Incorporated. He's actually worked on a book called A Journey into Prayer. We've been talking about that a little bit. I'm going to hand the reins back over to Bill here a little bit. He's got a lot to talk about. I'm sure you probably want to speak about a couple other things, Bill. So let's just kind of carry on here.
Well, yes, I'm Bill Sweet. I'm the author of A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in a Laboratory, Agents of Science or Satan. That last part was going to be the original title, Agents of Science or Satan, but that thought was a little too wild. But that's how people perceive what we're doing. Either we're doing great work that's helping science, leaven science a little bit, or we're of Satan. This idea of testing prayer offends a lot of people, or has more so in the past. It's kind of leavening there, too. But my book is, you can read about it on the Just Hit Book on the Spindrift website, spindriftresearch.org website. You can read all about my book, and you can order it through there. I speak for Spindrift. We have a couple of us are extroverts. Most of the people at Spindrift are kind of quiet, introvert, nerd, scientific types. But some of us enjoy getting out there. Our research has been spoken about in quite a few places. You just haven't heard it directly referred to. It's people use our research, but they don't usually say it came from Spindrift Research. And one of the areas of our research that has not hit the big time yet, hasn't gotten into the big tent, but I think it will in the future, is the following. We were interested in, well, I should say we were interested. I should give the founders of Spindrift the compliment, Bruce and John Kleinbaugh, who are the Christian Science practitioners doing the work. They found that they met people who had real dramatic spiritual healings or modest spiritual healings, and they met people who, and they knew people because they knew the people were healed by prayer, and also some people had paranormal experiences, and a great many of them later forgot they had the experiences or diminished the importance of the experience or just didn't think much about them. But at the time they had them, it was a big deal, and it became a nothing deal. I don't know if you've run into this, but it got them thinking about what is going on here. So they started studying the Sigmund Freud's defense mechanisms of the mind, and they came up with some very unique experiments that are hard to explain over the radio, but you can read about it in our research, of how our own defense mechanisms. Society's also trying to suppress this too, but everybody knows that. Society wants to suppress psychic abilities. We already know it's our education things. But our own defense mechanisms in our mind are actually working against us and don't want us to know certain things about reality, the paranormal and what we call the paranormal. It really doesn't want that to come out. And the Kleinbaugh's found some ways of trapping the defense mechanisms in the process of trying to cover up people's experiences. When people have a dramatic psychic experience or a UFO experience or a spiritual healing, they really should at that moment write down immediately what happened to them, because that's the freshest and most accurate it's ever going to be. Because soon afterwards, the defense mechanisms are going to come into the situation and sabotage the accurate picture and make the person either look foolish or make them forget they had the experience, or alter it some way so that what they repeat about their experience isn't really accurate. So nobody's going to believe them because they won't have any credibility. So this is a very interesting reason Spindrift has come to the conclusion that in all these years of paranormal research and religious prayer, the phenomena involved have not been able to be pinned down. It's because we're being sabotaged by our own minds, our own defense mechanisms. And it's a very interesting area, and we think in the future it'll be very helpful when consciousness research really starts looking into these things. And this even happens for believers, as people want to believe in their own defense mechanism. Now, every once in a while, you'll meet a person who is able to avert their defense mechanisms, but that's very rare. That's very rare. Somehow, these are our best psychics and our best healers and everything. It'd be interesting to find out a reason why they are able to not be fooled by their defense mechanisms. They're very good at remembering their healings and accurately repeating, pretty accurately repeating what happened to them. So this is going to be a very interesting area. Now, this area is very mathematical and experimental, and it doesn't interest people as much as the prayer research, direct prayer research, but it is going to be very helpful to the sciences, because people do wonder, has that ever happened to you, where somebody told you an experience they had, and you talked to them about it later and says, oh, it was nothing, or they don't remember it, or they dismissed it?
Happens all the time with paranormal investigators across the whole United States, actually, and I've worked with many, many of them. They experience something out in the field, and then the first instinct when they get home is they reason it out. So you talk to them 24 hours later, and it's, yeah, that wasn't this. I believe it was this, 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 and this, and that's just the way it was.
There you go.
And most of them don't write down every little piece, though we were taught early on in the International Paranormal Research Society and a lot of others very early on that that's the first thing you should do. Write down every single note,
right.
Every single thing right when it happens.
Yeah, because your mind starts to undo it. It's surprising. I've had a couple people get angry at me, and a lady get angry at me for repeating back to them experiences they told me they had. I said, well, I never had that. What are you trying to do to me? What are you putting words in my mouth? I never experienced it. And they had told me all about these things, and they completely forgot about them.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder how people can forget traumatic experiences. Now, I can understand subtle experiences, but traumatic experiences? It's really an interesting area, and that's going to be, well, you can read about that on the Spindrift website on question 3 on the FAQ page. We have the summary of the main discoveries of Spindrift on the FAQ page, question 3. There's a summary of goal-directed prayer, there's a summary of non-goal-directed prayer, and there's an elaborate description of the defense mechanism work, and it's put in layman's terms. It isn't put in how a psychiatrist, a parapsychologist, or a mathematician would look at it. If you want that, we have that too. We have that too, but that would bore people. But I would like people to be aware that we're all experiencing paranormal things quite often, but we are dismissing them quite often. Things are happening more often than we think. We just have to be aware of it.
They do. It's just, like you said, most people tend to box it up, throw it in the corner, even though we're living in a society now where people want to experience things. It's still their natural instinct to not want to see it. I know that sounds crazy, listeners, but that's kind of the way the human mind thinks a lot of times.
That's right. That's what I'm trying to say. And another concept about Spindrift, I think everybody would be interested in, you mentioned quantum physics, you know the concept of entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
This is when a person, any human being, looks at something and thinks about something. On an unconscious quantum level, their mind is entangled with that thing. In relation, you have a relationship, whatever you're looking at, you have a relationship, and the more you love that thing and think about things, the closer you have a relationship with it on an unconscious level through quantum entanglement. And in Spindrift, we have our own term for entanglement. Glenn Biles, who started Spindrift, came up with the word associational linkage. The more you associational link to what you're praying for, the object of your prayer, the more you will flow from your prayerful thought to that object. So the more you know about it, the more you pay attention to it, the more you will have an entanglement with it, an associational linkage. There's a lot about an associational linkage on our website. And associational linkage, this is what advertising's all about. Every time you see a celebrity doing an advertisement, the reason they're on there is you're making an associational linkage of what you know about that celebrity. And that makes you buy the product. It has nothing to do with the product. The celebrity may not even know what he's doing with that product. But you connect to that celebrity. And we had an interesting thing that I wrote down when it happened. I talked to a guy. He told me his father once bought a car because the radio or the tape player in the car was playing Elvis Presley music. And he just loved Elvis Presley and he bought the car. Just make that associational linkage to something. It's a very interesting thing. So associational linkages are very important in prayer, too. We have to make strong associational linkages. Now, this is something that happened in March of this year. that I wrote down was quite interesting as an example. This had happened here in Chicago. Denzel Washington, and everybody knows who he is, right? The actor?
Yep.
Denzel Washington visited Chicago, and he wanted to eat at this restaurant he knew about. And Denzel and his driver, probably his Cadillac driver, I don't know, they couldn't find the restaurant. So Denzel opened the window and asked people on the street where this restaurant was, called Leon's Restaurant. He was told that the restaurant had closed, and he was quite upset about it. But anyway, the local newspapers in Chicago got wind of the story, and it got in the Chicago media that Denzel Washington was on. They couldn't find this restaurant was closed. So much attention was stirred up about Denzel Washington looking for this restaurant that the owners of the restaurant decided to reopen the restaurant. That is the effect of associational linkage connected to a celebrity. So last March 8th, Leon's restaurant reopened because of Denzel Washington.
We have an unspoken thing that most people in marketing and sales get trained is called association directional thinking. And wow. it's kind of simply put the same way. In marketing, you put together certain things that make you associate with the situation. For instance, if you go out to a Walmart store, packaging and products are put together a very specific way in food aisles to make you associate with making it look good. If it looks good, it'll taste good, you'll purchase it. There are certain pieces put together in commercials that are the same way. They're designed to repeat certain words, certain situations, certain colors, and certain images because it's more fascinating to the mind. Once you start to associate with that, if it's repetitively played over and over again, whether it's a jingle, a song, a specific image, then all of a sudden it sticks in your mind and you're more likely to buy it.
Right.
The same thing goes with speaking to somebody on the telephone or selling to somebody in person and so forth. The more you relate with the person or repeat specific things, the more it sticks in their head. And if they don't buy it from you that day, they're more likely to come back and buy it from you later. So I can definitely relate with that a little bit.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. You don't want associationally linked to bad things, but you want association linked to good things. But the more that we can concentrate our thought on what the object of prayer is, the stronger the associational linkage, the more the flow of the pure non-qualitative, the qualitative thought through non-goal-directed prayer will flow to the object. Or, you know, it actually works for goal-directed prayer too. The more you concentrate on your goals, the more you'll reach your goals. It works. It works. That's the idea behind the book, The Secret. I don't think that's, it's more, I think that's more of a Western cultural view of how to achieve a goal, but it does work. The more you think about something, the more you will find it will emerge. We just last week, talking about what you just said about marketing, this last week someone said to me, I don't get the Geico commercials, Geico insurance commercials. I said, well, you said the word Geico. That's all they want you to do. That's all the whole idea of it is that you remember the word Geico. You just proved the point. You don't have to understand it, but you said the word Geico, so it worked. They didn't realize that that's all it's trying to do.
Yeah. And that's really the concept behind a lot of that. You throw the gecko in there. Gecko is familiar with Geico. It refers to the word Geico. Even if you don't know what Geico is, an insurance company, you're more likely to remember that name, which means eventually you're going to research it and you're probably going to buy into it anyway.
Right. So it's important in prayer, if it's somebody who wants some advice about it, to know what you're praying about. The more you know about what you're praying about, the more you will have a channel to that object of prayer, let it be a pet, a plant, a person, or a situation. So associational linkage is a big deal. And that's another thing about today, too. It's hard for people to pay attention for a long time. But this is really an important factor in prayer, is paying attention. Don't let your mind drift. Don't be general. Be specific. And know it's one-on-one. And this is very helpful. And it's a bit of a discipline. It's a bit of a discipline. You know, people say things just to be kind. They says, oh, I'll pray for you, or pray for the world peace and all this stuff. Well, that stuff doesn't do anything. as far as we know, it maybe it does. I shouldn't say it does it. There's just no way to measure it, but it certainly is amorphous. And you want to know where you are and what you're praying for. And the more you know about what that is at the other end of the prayer, the more effective the prayer will be.
Well, I can certainly understand that a little bit. Well, actually, I understand that fully from personal experiences myself. I think the other half, you know, when somebody says, I'll pray for you or so forth, I think it's more the gesture. It's
right.
More, you know, it's a kind way of saying things. And intentionally, I know some pastors that actually do that. I know one pastor up here. He's a wonderful man. Jeff Deal, he'll say thanks, and he won't have a problem with me saying this, but he writes down every time you tell him, if you say, I'm ill, okay, he'll put it down. He has this long list, and he prays for every little thing, but the average person usually doesn't do that, and I think that's his way of kind of giving back.
Well, he's showing discipline, too. He's writing it down, and he's thinking about it, paying attention. He's making the associational linkage to the words on the paper with who asked for it. This is all very helpful. These are all actually good things.
Oh, absolutely.
And on the Spindrift website under FAQ, I think it's question 5. I'll look here on the website. But there's a lot of hints there that we've come up with that we found helpful in prayer. On the FAQ page, there's 5 Spindrift hints about prayer that might actually play right into what we're talking about here. And I'll let you know in a minute if it's correct. I believe it's question 5. And it is not. Where is it? It's question 7. Question 7. Can you share more hints about prayer? Question 7 on the FAQ page at spindriftresearch.org. I think your listeners will find that very helpful. There is one interesting thing on there that probably no one's ever heard about before. How do you pray for things in the world and situations and everything? And we found out through our experiments with plants that a helpful thing is to pray without getting interference from other people. And what we mean by that is that sometimes when you're praying about something, everybody else is praying the same thing, and they actually bump into each other in consciousness. So Jesus says, go into your closet and close the door and pray in secret. Now, there's a lot of wisdom in that, besides Jesus telling us to do it. If you pray about something nobody else knows about, you have a clear channel to what you're praying about. But if you're praying what everybody else is praying, then you're just copying somebody else and you're bumping into each other. You want to find something to pray about that nobody else is thinking about. And we had an interesting experience. Well, we have several interesting examples of that, but one is that one of our Spindrift people was a volunteer in Haiti and was working with this family that had a cow and a goat, and they both were not producing enough milk for the family. And instead of praying for the cow or the goat, which didn't do any good just to pray for that, the person decided to remember what they learned at Spindrift. And all they did was pray about something nobody else was thinking about. They just prayed about the word milk. Didn't think about the goat or the cow. Just, what is milk? What does it mean? What does it do? Just prayed about milk. That's it. Just the concept of milk. Nobody else would do that. You wouldn't just think of that. Well, then the cow and the goat produced more milk that met the family's needs. It's very interesting.
That's very
so you find something to pray about that nobody else is thinking about. On this hints thing, that is the third point of that. We have 5 points here, but that's the third point on this thing. It's when praying in secret, pray for the undefended thought. You are praying where others are not praying. That's a really good idea.
My prayer
original
is
thought. Me. Original thought. Go ahead.
Because of my faith, but. When I pray differently than most people. I know most people have a sequence that they go about. Most of the time when I'm praying, I'm talking just like I am now. I'm just carrying on a conversation with God or whoever you want to call them, listeners, when you decide to call. Everybody has a different version of God and the devil, good and evil, and so forth. but mine is God. And when I talk to God, I talk to God like I talk to any human being.
Okay. Yeah. There's some belief, I don't know if you've ever read this in your paranormal research, but in ancient times, there's some belief, and there's no way to prove it, that thousands of years ago, some of the more spiritually minded men were able to actually talk with God in a conversational way. There was a conversation or talk to God. It seems weird today to think that's possible, but you wonder if people were just more attuned in the past, and at least in some cases, it could do that.
Well, I just
life
think
was simpler.
If I was a almighty being, or however you want to perceive God, I would prefer somebody just talk to me. So when I do it, I just kind of carry on a conversation and say, hey, look, this is what's going on. It's got nothing. And most of the time when I pray, it's got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with family, other situations going on. I tend to not concentrate it on myself.
That's hard to do though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It always is.
It always is. I catch myself on that every day. Oh, you're selfish. You're talking about self. Now, it doesn't mean that we have needs that don't be that needed. We need to pay for ourselves sometime for some things, but we have to watch out because a lot of people pray selfishly. I mean, look at the people in these sports situations. You hear, I'm praying for my team to win. I'm praying. Oh my gosh, this is their concept of prayer. It's kind of like can't believe it. But that's where they are.
Seen that many, many times. Well, we're actually down to the last 5 minutes of the show, so let's talk a little bit about where they can find you again so that we can figure out where your book is and where your research is and so forth, because I really encourage the listeners to take some time and read through all of this. It's amazing stuff.
It's unique. Spindrift Research. It's spindriftresearch.org is the website. You'll find all kinds of information on there. You can write to us. If you ask questions, my book is A Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory, Agents of Science or Satan by Bill Sweet. I think you'll find it very interesting. It's actually two books in one. The last part of the book, page 330 to the end, is kind of like somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of time, so it's kind of a short version of the book. But if you want the real details, you can start at the beginning. And I put that in there because society today is kind of internet-oriented and people don't want to spend a lot of time and read through a whole book, but there's some people read the whole thing. And the experiments are in the appendix, and the experiments are also on the website. Just hit experiments, and you'll get an overview of Spindrift. You can read the experiments, and then the scientific people want to know, what are the theories that you're testing? Well, the theories, there's a theory section in there, too, of the theories that we're testing. So they should find that very interesting. And let us know if you have some unusual experiences with the difference between goal-directed prayer and non-goal-directed prayer. Some people have these experiences in moments when they're not thinking about it. Have you noticed, by the way, that some people have psychic experiences and spiritual experiences kind of like when they kind of forget about the whole thing, or they give up, or they just I've tried everything, nothing works, and then all of a sudden they kind of let everything go, and then that's when the experience happens. Have you noticed that ever?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, most that is a good. Yeah, we need more. We need more experiences like that where we let go. That's hard to program because if you're trying to force yourself to let go, your ego is there doing the opposite. You know. It's funny, you can't win, almost.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. I think the most positive things that ever happened in my life, spiritually and even non-spiritually, is when I started to let go of the reality that I can't control everything that's going on. So it's time to sit back and smell the roses and accept that and look at the more positive things and the more delightful things that happen in life. And ever since I've done that, things have been going great.
well, that is terrific. We need to find a way to practice that without thinking about it too much. It's kind of funny.
Well, listeners, you've been listening to BBS Radio and a delightful conversation with Mr. Bill Sweet from Spindrift. You've got all the information on where to find him. I do encourage you to look at that after the show and read the book here, or get the book and read through it. Look at the research this weekend. It's very amazing stuff. Next week's show is what I like to call my Halloween special. Now, I know it's after the 31st, but I tend to not celebrate Halloween in my own little way on the 31st because I'm wrapped up in business and a lot of other things. And of course, I do have to take my child out trick-or-treating, and BBS is every Friday. So we're going to have a very special guest on with me. She's been on Ghost of Shepherdstown. She's a very delightful medium herself. She's very in tune with her gifts. I won't release the name yet, but I do want you to tune in because I absolutely love her. Very good friend of mine. Well, I won't say very good friend of mine, but pretty good friend of mine. I've learned to respect her very, very much. I'm going to end the show the way I do every single week. And that is, as you're learning, and the paranormal truth should be that reality. Many of you throughout the years have been stuck in the phase that the paranormal is all about ghosts. It's all about UFOs. It's all about cryptids. It's all designed to go one certain way. As you're learning, real parapsychology, real paranormal research, and the real paranormal in general can touch base in many, many areas. We just learned tonight that the power of prayer is one of those areas. There's many other fascinating things that if you manage to concentrate more than 5 minutes and you do the research and you start reading, your brain is going to open up to some amazing things.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I want you to stick in your head tonight. If you zoomed out on the rest of it, stick that in your head. Do some time, read some books, do some research. You'll find some fascinating stuff. That's our show tonight. I hope you enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.